How do you know you're up to date? When you follow EMS World, you answer that question with confidence. Because when we say EMS World, we mean the whole world of EMS. The remaining question for you is, how will you stay up to date? In print, online, at EMS World Expo, the world's largest EMS dedicated conference, and now in a podcast.
In a small service like this, we're dependent on each other and see each other all the time, says Shirani. We might go to each other's houses for dinner or go goof around together on a day off. If we don't get along, we won't be able to function. And here, everybody really gets along.
You're alone with that patient for a long time. In rural EMS, you really have to know your medicine and you have to be able to use critical thinking.
Hello, I'm John Eric, Senior Editor for EMS World. Welcome to the new EMS World podcast feature. Today's podcast is based on our July 2019 cover report, Alone on the Range, which profiled Harney District Hospital EMS, a rural system in eastern Oregon. We're joined today by Travis Locke, who is a paramedic with that service, who's going to talk a little bit about working in such a rural area. Travis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Let me ask you first, what is your background and how did you first become interested in working in the emergency services?
My background is actually more in agriculture. Really, emergency services was an accidental career for me. I was working for Les Schwab right after 9/11. A friend of mine wanted to join a fire department that I didn't know was local. I joined it, and this was over just out of Salem area. About 85% of the runs there were EMS assist. I wanted to be able to better assist the EMS, so I went back, got my EMT, and after that, wanted to learn why the paramedics made the decisions they did. So I went and got my paramedic and haven't looked back since.
And then how did you end up in out in Burns?
Well, I've always had a fascination with more of a rural EMS system. I've been around both the larger systems and the smaller systems. And I find that you become, what's the best way to put this? In a rural system, you actually run a lot more roles and it's less like you're just a cog in the system. So I feel like you make more of a difference in the rural systems.
Maybe it's feeling more like part of a community than just a cog in the machine. In such a small town and a remote setting, Burns only has 2,700 people and the county, I think, 7,000 or so. What do you like about it out there? Personally and professionally, what are some of the challenges and positive aspects to it?
One of the big things I like out here professionally is how much it actually makes me use my critical thinking skills. Because of the long transports we can have, short end of 130 miles for interfacility transports, and we can be almost 140 miles south on scene calls, you actually see the effects of your medications that you may not see when you're looking at shorter transport times. And because of that, I've had to learn my medicine better out here than what I had to learn when I was on the other side of the state. As far as personally, coming from an agricultural background, I prefer the outdoor settings. This lets me get back into some of my past experiences doing ranching work with some of my friends out here, and we have some great hunting and fishing out in this area. So I've really enjoyed that.
Is that the primary difference in being a paramedic in such a rural environment? Is the familiarity with the medications and some of the longer-term interventions for these long transports that you wouldn't see in the city?
That's one of the big things that I found I really enjoy. But another aspect you run across out here in a rural setting is you actually know everybody. When you roll up on a scene, chances are you actually already know the person. You know what a lot of their background is. I've been out here for nearly 9 years now, and because of that, it really helps improve the care I can give patients by already knowing their backgrounds when I come up on them.
Are there difficult aspects to that, to treating people you know and are neighbors with and friends in your community?
There are. Since you already know them, if you roll up on a bad scene where you're looking at a fatality car crash or anything that way, chances are it's also somebody you know.
Now, I know you're also a firefighter in Burns. What are the benefits of sort of wearing both hats and how does it help? How does one help the other?
One of the big benefits I've really ran across out here wearing both hats is the fact that I've already got a rapport built with the other agencies out here. Larger areas where you have multiple agencies coming together all the time, you can have rapport, or because there's so many responders, you may have to build rapport once you get to scene. But out here, being on the fire side, the firefighters and officers there already know my knowledge, my capabilities. They're willing to take my advice and orders a lot quicker on scene out here than some other areas.
Oh, wonderful. One thing that Harney EMS has benefited from is real good retention on the paramedics it's hired. What do you think sort of plays into that good retention you guys have had?
The good retention is a combination of a couple things. One of them being the sense of community out here. Being such a small, tight-knit group, it really is almost like a family. We're constantly bantering in the office, bantering as we're heading out to calls and such, and it just really feels like, you know, a good friendship where you're doing this where we all enjoy it. The other thing is being out in a rural area like this, we actually have a little more freedom in how our shift runs. We're not necessarily at quarters all the time. We do have a certain amount of time from time of tone out to time of rollout. I believe it's 7 minutes out here. So you have to be fairly close, but it gives you the opportunity to, just even while you're on shift, spend some time with your own family at home.
Wonderful. Are there downsides or challenges to working in the environment? What are some of the difficulties?
When you're looking at interfacility transports of anywhere from 2 hours to 6 hours, depending on what facility you're going to, you're alone with that patient for a long time. And coming from larger areas where you're looking at anywhere from 15 minutes to half an hour to get to your larger hospitals, that can be a little bit of a challenge. The other thing is the lack of resources out here. If you're running out on the extreme rural calls, you may just have your 2 or 3 man crew that you're with. We don't have fire coverage in this entire county, and the county is about the size of the state of Massachusetts. So you're looking at a huge area, a little over 10,000 square miles. The fire services out here only cover roughly 10 miles out of town. So you may be stuck with just your crew, or if you're lucky, some rural first responders, one or two of them might show up. But you're really, really limited on resources out in these
small areas. So it's just you guys, once you get a certain distance out of town, help's not coming.
Yep. And there's one other aspect that they may find a little bit hard too, not necessarily because of the job or the job performance itself, but because we do have limited amount of paramedics out here. As a paramedic, you are actually married to your job a little bit more too. We have to coordinate with each other as to who goes out of town, so we make sure we maintain some level of depth of coverage for response in the area.
Can you tell me about 2 or 3 of your most interesting calls from over the years?
Well, as far as my most interesting calls, unfortunately, the ones that I remember the best are the bad ones. One thing I've noticed is out here, we actually get more semi-rollovers than we do in other areas I've been around. With the fiberglass bodies of the semis, you can actually run across its own problems when you start looking at extrication. I remember one extrication we were out on, and we were on that extrication for almost 2 hours, which is kind of uncommon for us out here. We were working on what we call plan double Z by the time we got the person out, just how many times we had to switch what plan we were working on because things weren't working. Other things you run across out here is we end up with a lot of horse recreation, whether it's with the ranching or whether it's with other folks coming in with the horses. We have the wild horse corrals out here. We can actually tell the hospital when we're coming in that we have a horse wreck coming in, and they'll know what the injuries are. And there's been some interesting injuries on some of those horse crashes. Since you know the folks out here too, when you actually have a good call, it actually gives you more of a sense of fulfillment when you do good and actually have a good outcome.
When I wrote the article, I know you were trying to hire a paramedic. How has that gone? Have you found somebody yet?
We have not filled that position as of this point. We've had a few applications come in, but so far they haven't meshed with the system too well to be able to hire them. And that's probably one of the other reasons why we have good retention out here, is we really do try to match a paramedic into our system instead of just hire the first person that comes along.
What kind of qualities would you be looking for in that paramedic?
One of the things we look for is someone who really enjoys the rural settings and the challenges that come with rural settings. That way, they're not necessarily using this as just a stepping stone for a few months or just a couple of years and moving out of the area. We're looking for someone who loves the kind of challenges that come with these rural areas and wants to really integrate into the system and become a large part of the system.
Travis, what else should folks know about rural EMS and the challenges you guys face out there? What would you want people to take from this article and this podcast? What is the message that can get missed sometimes about rural systems?
It's not necessarily about the number of calls you can go on, because quite honestly, we don't have a large call volume. Last year, we had a little over 1,000 calls for the year. But it's the experiences you run across and the fact that you're out there with search and rescue in these rescue events. You're out here in the weather that flight services can't fly in and doing that type of stuff and just having to use your critical thinking. And that's really what I'm going to push out there is in rural EMS, you really have to know your medicine and you have to be able to use critical thinking.
Certainly, it's not a place for someone with subpar skills to hide.
A lot of larger agencies where you may have a paramedic partner, you can actually get away with having some of those subpar skills in that. But out here, you're most likely going to be the only ALS person on the call. And there's times you may have another paramedic there at scene with you, but you will be the primary ALS person. And so any kind of lacking in skills you have is going to come out.
I'm John Eric from EMS World. Thank you to Travis Locke from Harney District Hospital EMS for being our guest today.
And for more on the topic of rural EMS, listen now to our audio long read as author John Eric reads his story from July 2019's EMS World magazine called Alone on the Range. Let us know if you enjoyed this long read by emailing editor@emsworld.com.
And this is our July 2019 cover story, Alone on the Range. However you define it, and in recent years the U.S. government has done so 15 different ways, a lot of America is rural. For purposes of ambulance service reimbursement, some parts are even super rural. And beyond that, even more sparsely settled areas are tagged frontier, a common definition being a population density of 6 or fewer people per square mile. Then there's Harney County, Oregon, located in the state's southeastern empty quarter. It has roughly 7,300 people across 10,226 sprawling square miles, an area bigger than 6 states. That squints down to a population density of 0.7, landing Harney among the 40 least densely populated counties in America. It meets other frontier criteria as well, including distance from and travel time to big cities. It's 130 miles to Bend, 190 to Boise, 280 to Portland. Harney's cows outnumber its people 14 to 1. Emergency medical services for the entire county come from Harney District Hospital EMS. Based in the county seat of Burns, population 2,772, it's a service that defies much of what you might expect for a jurisdiction that's isolated, poor, and shrinking. It's an ALS service. It's well-staffed. It's financially viable. And its providers, facing an environment their urban counterparts often underestimate, are routinely challenged by distance and resources to perform to the boundaries of their scope and skills. We don't need heroes. That's not what we're looking for in our community, says Jeff Shirani, EMTP, the hospital's EMS manager. We're looking for people who will help us in any way they can when things get rough, because there's no other help here. We're it. The only defense. The EMS department at Harney District Hospital consists of Shirani and 4 other full-timers, plus a roster of 15 casuals who are essentially paid volunteers. There are 3 paramedics. The call volume is about 1,000 a year, 96% of it in Burns and adjoining Hines. Around 800 come via 911. The rest are transfers. 2 or 3 personnel are on duty at any given time, 2 full-timers and a supplemental casual. Crews are on call for 24-hour shifts and respond from their homes. If a crew is occupied for a prolonged period doing a transfer or even just responding down to somewhere like Fields, the county's southernmost town some 110 miles away, it's usually not hard to call another. Everyone's close, everyone's willing. That there are so few, though, not only EMTs and paramedics, but physicians, nurses, and other health professionals in the county, necessitates a certain flexibility. Crews have to be intimate with all the skills and tools they might need to care for very sick patients on very long rides. They have to pitch in at the hospital if needed. They have to be okay as the only real line of defense because often it's not even feasible to call a helicopter. We're even far for the air services, says Shirani. If they get into the county to any certain distance, they have to go to the airport and fuel up to go back. And usually, because of the distances and flight times, we end up beating the flight crew back here with the patient. Some of those patients can be deep in the backcountry and badly hurt. Harney's main industry is ranching, which produces some unique trauma. Imagine a horse rolling over you. Out in the county, even locating victims can be a challenge. Closer to town, US 20, long, straight, flat, and lightly used, produces some grisly high-speed crashes. But a lot of the county is simply empty. Almost 75% of its land is federally owned. Harney County was the site of the 2016 Mollier National Wildlife Refuge occupation. After the trauma, the call profile isn't abnormal. Harney's population skews older and isn't wealthy. The median household income is just two-thirds the state average. While ambulances come from Burns, the service invests in training and equipping volunteer first responders in the county's farther-flung outposts. There are five in Druzy, two in Fields, one each in Riley and Crane. They all have day jobs, though, so might also need some time to respond. They have AEDs, but have only used them once or twice in 9 years. Bystanders pitch in when someone's hurt, and the local law can do CPR and defibrillate, but if you're far from town and your problem is serious, your prognosis is grim. It sounds cold, but if you're up on Steen's Mountain and someone's doing CPR on you, you're not going to survive, says Shirani. What's scary for our guys is when they're out with a patient 100 miles from the hospital and the patient arrests. Now you have 100 miles and some time to be working on this patient before you're back at the hospital. So if you're there when it happens, it's terrible, but if you're not there when it happens, the likelihood is even worse. No place to hide. Distances like that require providers with game. For someone with subpar skills, the frontier is no place to hide. In the city, EMS would drop a patient, sign out, and they were gone. You rarely saw the same person twice, and there was never much continuity, says Sarah Leosa, DO, the service's medical director. Here our guys come in, the patient will have a tube, an IO, all these things, either because of their comfort with those procedures or the distance they've come. I feel like I see a lot more appropriate interventions when people arrive. That requisite flexibility carries over to the hospital, where Leosa also wears the hats of family medicine physician, medical director for hospice and clinic operations, public health medical officer, and medical examiner. She faces the formidable challenge of keeping a sharp edge on important skills providers may rarely use. To that end, the EMS team does plenty of work at the hospital, where a lot of the casuals have full-time jobs anyway, working as medical assistants, CNAs, even in security. If there's a cardiac arrest in-house, EMS personnel respond like everyone else. They do CPR, intubate, start IVs. Around a third of the IVs they start are there because we don't get that opportunity in the field, says Shirani. Leosa also ensures each member attends one live birth a year in case one happens out in the county and they have to bring mother and baby back. Having EMS personnel work for and in the hospital has an additional benefit to patients who enjoy greater continuity of care and fewer of the handoffs that are so ripe for error. The hospital has a 24-hour emergency department, but the doc and staff beyond nurses may need a few minutes to get there. They could be in the hospital, at its adjoining clinic, or home asleep. If it's the latter, they have 20 minutes to arrive. Crews call ahead, cell and radio coverage permitting, which they don't always, to start the clock. EMS uses leveling criteria in the field to give their docs an idea of what's coming and guide resource preparation. A helipad sits across the street. Acute patients can be flown to Boise or Bend, which have level 2 trauma centers, or to Portland for a level 1. Trauma accounts for fewer transfers than cardiac and dialysis, though. The nearest stroke center is Bend. Ischemic patients go on to Portland. Air support comes from Boise, Bend, or one of a handful of small Oregon towns, Redmond, Ontario, LaGrande. There's no community paramedicine program because it would be redundant. The principles already infuse how the system operates. Hospice and a clinic are integrated. Patients have easy access to physicians and mid-levels. Docs do home visits. Ambulance crews might deliver meds. There are community health workers. A special reimbursement plan for rural hospitals mitigates the need to transport everyone, and in fact, EMS crews try not to. Our goal is to maintain a high non-transport rate, says Shirani. We'll do a full evaluation in the field and decide if the patient needs to go to the ER or the clinic. If they just need the clinic, we'll call to get them in. If they need transport, we'll call a taxi. The hospital may even pay for the taxi if a patient can't. Crews may call a patient's primary care physician directly from the scene. The town is small enough to know them all. If they can call the PCP, says Leosa, the PCP can tell us, well, I was at his house yesterday and he didn't look like that. Bring him in. Comfortable being uncomfortable. This all requires a certain type of provider, and while finding them in a place like Burns isn't always easy, hiring the right ones has led to good retention. The service is currently trying to hire a paramedic, but it's the first time in 8 years. EMTs are homegrown, taught by HDH paramedics through a local community college outreach program. It's hard to really find good fits for this community because as a paramedic, you have to be comfortable with so many things, says Leosa. Mostly, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. For example, these guys ventilate patients. They have to be comfortable for 3 hours with a patient on a vent. It's hard for us to hire city paramedics because they don't always have that skill set. The softer skills are important, too. Life in a small town isn't for everyone. You have to value community. You'll know the neighbors you're helping. In Burns, any doc will take your call, and a plea for extra hands will likely bring multiple sets. I've worked in systems that were much bigger, and there's a real connection being in a small town, says Shirani. There's an attachment that makes it even more important for us to make sure people get what they need. We have to get Gladys off the floor again, and it's the fourth time this week? Well, that's all Gladys has. There's nothing else here for her, so we really buy into that. Balancing the books. Harney District Hospital took over EMS duties from the Burns Fire Department in 2000, at the time the service was struggling. Aligning with the hospital was a financial lifeline. As a critical access hospital, a federal designation designed to reduce facilities' financial vulnerability and keep essential services in rural communities, HDH is eligible for cost-based reimbursement from Medicare. That compensates it at 101% of all allowable costs. Making EMS part of the hospital got its costs covered under the same mechanism. The other main revenue source is property taxes, which yield about $1 million a year. Without that property tax base, says Catherine White, the hospital's CFO since 2009, we probably wouldn't have a hospital here. Build rates are on the high side, as there aren't a lot of other sources of income, but a lot is written off. As a small hospital, HDH has negotiated solid contracts with private payers, though they're not a big chunk of the income profile. The effect on their budgets is minimal for our hospital and the size of our community, and I'm pretty good at playing the poor card, says White with a smile. We can't take less than that. We can't function without it. The property tax base keeps us on the positive side, but if we weren't collecting what we could from those commercial payers, we'd definitely struggle. Around 20 to 30% of revenue comes from Medicaid. Its expansion in Oregon has made a big difference, White says. And the hospital has added numerous capabilities to help keep local dollars local. It bought the clinic, launched a pain management program, orthopedic and dermatology services, an infusion clinic. It's hired more providers. It's looking now for an occupational therapist and a licensed clinical social worker. If there's a financial threat, it's losing the critical access hospital designation. The CAH standard requires no more than 25 acute care inpatient beds and at least 35 miles to the next hospital. Not all hospitals that meet that definition struggle. Pinching the benefits down could do far more damage to a place like HDH than it might to others. There's always opposition to cost-based reimbursement at the national level, says White. When you lump us in with some of those other places, a lot of those hospitals are at capacity because they draw from larger communities, but they're designated critical access because they meet that definition. We're very different from them. We average 5 patients a day on the inpatient side. EMS averages 2 runs a day. If they decide at the national level to make changes to that whole system, it could affect us greatly. Closeness and collegiality. Adversity brings people together. And while living in a pleasant little town on a remote western frontier isn't exactly hardship, in Burns it is fostered. In its EMS service, small hospital, and compact local healthcare system, that sense of closeness and collegiality to which everyone aspires. In a small service like this, we're dependent on each other and see each other all the time, says Shirani. We might go to each other's houses for dinner or go goof around together on a day off. If we don't get along, we won't be able to function. And here, everybody really gets along. What's even more important, though, is the quality of the local caregiving chops. The frontier is unforgiving. Don't take its EMTs and paramedics as anything less than you'd find in the metro world. They might be more. As a nurse, I'm just floored at the knowledge they have, the skills they possess, and their ability to take a terrible situation and remain calm and provide care, says Mary Schimmelfennig, RN, a nurse at the hospital since 2012. They have become resources for absolutely everyone and provide a sense of confidence and comfort when they walk into the ER. I think a lot of times when we're transferring patients or giving a report to people in Bend or Boise or Portland, people might assume we're from the middle of nowhere and don't really know what we're doing. I wish they could realize there's some very true and real talent and professionalism out here and some really good medical care being provided. No, we can't send somebody to a cath lab, but we can dang sure get them ready to go and stabilize them until they can get there. Given our circumstances and resources, we really are providing some pretty darn good care.
This has been an episode of EMS World Podcast. You can find this article and hundreds more like it at emsworld.com. You can also follow EMS World on Twitter and Facebook. And see you in New Orleans in October for EMS World Expo.